It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Well, he wants what's good for Russia.
Yeah.
And I want what's good for the United States.
In his first public comment since his summit with Vladimir Putin, President Trump did not talk about the new firestorm surrounding his son Don Jr. today, but he did say he thinks he and Putin can get along.
I think we got along very, very well. We're a tremendously powerful nuclear power, and so are they.
That's right.
It doesn't make sense not to have some kind of a relationship.
In an appearance with Sean Hannity last night, Donald Trump Jr. acknowledged that he took the meeting with Russian attorney Natalia Veselnitskaya because she may have had useful information about Hillary Clinton and possible ties to Russia.
I'd been reading about scandals that people were probably underreporting for a long time, so maybe it was something that had to do with one of those things. I mean, this was her, perhaps, involvement with the Russian government. So.
Trump Jr. played down the significance of the encounter, saying Veselnitskaya revealed nothing about Hillary Clinton and instead wanted to talk about Russian adoptions. The president praised the appearance, tweeting this morning, quote, "My son Donald did a good job last night. He was open, transparent, and innocent. This is the greatest witch hunt in political history. Sad." Russian officials today denied any involvement in the meeting between Trump Jr. and Veselnitskaya, mocking the whole episode as worthy of a soap opera.
I turned on the TV and on Western channels to keep discussing it. It is amazing how you can make a buzz from nothing.
For his part, the president tried to force the spotlight onto the Democrats, tweeting, quote, "Washington Times states Democrats have willfully used Moscow disinformation to influence the presidential election against Donald Trump." And, quote, "Why aren't the same standards placed on the Democrats? Look what Hillary Clinton may have gotten away with. Disgraceful."
Well, that was a portion of John Roberts' report last night on Special Report on Fox News. And this is Sandy Rios in the morning. Thank you for joining me. Unfortunately, we have to talk about this. Maybe this will be the last time. Let's be optimistic. But I guess if the other news channels have anything to do with it, might not happen. 54% of the evening coverage of news last night was dedicated to Don Trump Jr.'s email. And the fact that he released those emails about his exchange setting up this meeting with this Russian attorney. And combined, the networks aired 57 minutes and 18 seconds worth of news. And from that, they spent 31 minutes and 10 seconds talking about Don Jr.'s email. This is from Media Research Center. CBS Evening News had the largest. The network spent 12 minutes and 57 seconds talking about Don Jr. while devoting 5 minutes and 44 seconds for all other news. That's 70%. So you can see where this is going. And we talked yesterday about, I emphasized what I believed was true, and I believe it is true, that there was nothing wrong with getting, being excited even about getting opposition research on your opponent, even from a foreign government. If there's no money exchange, no promises made, there's nothing. If it's true information, don't believe me. The French, the British, the Israelis, if they have information on American citizens that is something that we need to know, they tell us. And there was nothing illegal. In fact, Jay Sekulow, who is representing Donald Trump as his attorney, said on yesterday, that there is no illegality in Donald Trump Jr.'s meeting with the Russian lawyer. Okay, so that just to clarify that, because we got into that with a caller yesterday, it's not illegal what he did. I think he was duped. I don't think there's any question about that. I told you about how the KGB plays a double, triple, quadruple game. They are masters at lying. I'm not saying she's with the KGB, but she's from that culture. And carefully, I will say to you that there are a lot of Russian immigrants in this country, and one of the problems you have is that they are ruthlessly dishonest. There may be exceptions to that, but they are able to play mind games that sometimes, because of our deep Judeo-Christian heritage and a couple hundred years of believing and telling the truth, we honestly can't compete with them sometimes. And let me say again, because I think it's important to explain to you that Russia has deeply Christian roots as well, but they were pretty much erased during the 60 years of lying communism, which is all about lying and duplicity and games and mind games and the lack of God. So anyway, I didn't want to get into all that because I have a lot to tell you. Let me jump right in. We just found out from a report by John Solomon and Jonathan Easley that the DOJ, Eric Holder's DOJ under Barack Obama, made a special exception somehow to let this attorney in. She did not have a visa. She was denied a visa in 2015. We're not exactly sure why. I can't go into all of her background because in the interest of time, all that I know. Natalia Veselnitskaya was denied a visa for a very long time, and then suddenly she shows up. She has this meeting in Trump Tower, and then they further report that she showed up in Washington in the front row of a House Foreign Affairs Committee hearing on Russian policy. And then she went to a movie at the museum in Washington featuring this. The focus was the Magnitsky Act, which is what she has been lobbying to overturn. It's the act that I'm not going to go into because I'm going to let you hear a clip explaining it better. But Vladimir Putin stopped Russian adoptions by Americans because of this act. All right, so now we know that she was allowed. We don't know why. It's a mystery. In fact, we believe she might have been here illegally. Chuck Grassley, the senator from Iowa, is investigating that right now. This Magnitsky Act, which does relate to Russian adoptions because Vladimir Putin stopped them because of the passage of this, is all key. And it does make sense of what Donald Trump Jr. said about his interview, his time with this Russian attorney. Bill Browder now is the founder of a successful company. He was on with Martha McCollum, and he explains the Magnitsky Act. And some of this I think you should hear because it explains a lot of the intrigue here. Don't think it's simple. You have to stay tuned, but just hang on, and I think these pieces will kind of fall together because really truth does kind of become clear after a while in spite of the convolution. Let's listen to Bill Browder with Martha.
I was the largest foreign investor in Russia. I uncovered corruption. They got angry with me for uncovering corruption, expelled me from the country. My offices were raided. They seized my documents. They used the documents to steal $230 million of taxes that we paid. My lawyer, Sergei Magnitsky, uncovered, exposed it. He was then taken into custody, tortured for 358 days, and killed 7 years ago at the age of 37. And I've been on a mission to get justice for him ever since. It became clear that I wasn't going to get any justice in Russia because it's such a corrupt country. So I sought to get justice outside of Russia. And the justice that I sought to get was to freeze the assets and ban the visas of the people who were involved in the murder of Sergei Magnitsky and the people who do similar crimes. And I took this idea to the U.S. Congress in 2010, and it ended up becoming the Magnitsky Law in 2012. And it imposes visa sanctions and asset freezes on human rights violators from Russia. Vladimir Putin is absolutely furious, and he ended up making it his single largest foreign policy priority to stop it. Now, the other thing that we did was we tracked down the money from the crime, and we found some of that money in the United States. We reported it to the Department of Justice. They opened up a criminal case, and the defendant who showed up was a Russian by the name of Denis Kotsev. And Denis Kotsev was represented by Natalia Veselnitskaya. And she then has embarked on a 3-year campaign to try to overturn the Magnitsky Act. And it's been a well-financed campaign. They've hired the best lawyers, the best lobbyists, the best public relations professionals. And they've gone all over Capitol Hill. And they eventually found their way to the possible next president of the United States back in 2016. By meeting the son of Donald Trump.
All right, I don't know if that's, I don't expect it to be clear, but maybe clearer. This attorney, Natalia Veselnitskaya, was her passion, at least her pay, her whatever, her bread and butter, was coming on trying to get this Magnitsky Act reversed. She actually was in the country. She met with congressmen, and then she managed to get in to see Donald Trump Jr., who had, did you know about the Magnitsky Act? Are you clued into that? Do you think Donald Trump Jr. was? He doesn't know. And so she sort of baited him with saying she had opposition research on Hillary Clinton, but it was nonsense. She had nothing. In fact, I heard reports saying that she doesn't even speak English. And someone said if she's an example of the best that Russia has to offer in terms of undercover spies, this is pathetic. We have nothing to worry about. And so that's kind of the gist of that. Now, I have other things I want to tell you related to it. This is amazing. You know, Donald Trump Jr. Quickly releases all of his email, however incriminating some of it might seem. It certainly does seem that way to many pundits about how he's eager to hear opposition research on Hillary and he's excited about it, and that's supposed to be terrible. But Jared Yates Sexton was a writer for the New York Times. He is a writer for the New York Times, Politico, and the New Republic. And it seems as though Jared is the one who was getting ready to publish all of these email. So here's the irony. Well, let me just read the headline. This is from Conservative Review. His name is Journalist melts down after Trump Jr. scoops him. So this is what he tweets, Jared, meaning he was going to print this story and Donald Trump Jr. Releases his email. Hey, so don't get me wrong, I'm incredibly happy that the president's son tweeted out proof of collusion. It's just so bizarre. As an independent journalist, you work crazy hard hoping something would fall into your lap, and he tweeted it. And it's so strange. Last year, there were those of us who were all over this story and being called paranoid, and now this? I mean, he just tweeted it like it was nothing, like it was just another Tuesday. Then he goes, I'm not entirely convinced I'm not having a break from reality. I tracked down sources, followed so many dead leads, labored over this, and then just, you know, tweeted. He tweeted out the proof. Like, I spent hours and days and weeks and months, and his son just hit tweet. I worked on this story for a year, and he tweeted it out. I chased this story for a year, and he just tweeted it out. The son of the president just released the smoking gun, and the people are laughing about it on the news, and it goes on and on and on. And so other journalists weigh in and say, man, get a grip. You know, get a grip. So this guy is openly complaining. He's so disappointed he lost his scoop. I mean, that's just amazing. By the way, I just read an article. I don't even think I have it in my hand here. That the New York Times is delivering pink slips to, I believe, upwards of 100 editors because they don't have the money to sustain their staff. So it's having an effect, I think, this bad reporting. I'm not saying this is not worthy of discussing. I'm just saying that the twisted way it's being covered and even, you know, piled on by conservative media who I told you, many of them are never Trumpers. And this is kind of, they're going, oh, see, I told you so. This is kind of a see, I told you so moment, only it isn't. It really isn't. And so Jack Crow from the Daily Caller wrote an article about how Natalia Veselnitskaya had links to this Fusion GPS. I've told you that many times. That is the organization that prepared that really lying, horrible, defamatory dossier against Donald Trump. And so I want to point you to an article in the Washington Times where Rowan Scarborough actually spells out even more detail of what I've been telling you for yay weeks now. I didn't know that she was related to GPS. The Fusion GPS, but it just tells the story of this dossier and the connections here and how Democrats are using this information and have been against Trump, and it's false information. Yeah, and we're going to put this on our Facebook page so that you can read it. There's so much more to say about that. When will I ever get through all of this? Well, I want to change the subject because the Senate is working, as you know, this morning. They're going to be revealing their new version of the health care bill. And there's a lot to say about that. Ken Cuccinelli joins me next, and certainly he has a lot to say about it. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Hello, I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. We're going to Israel in March, and we'd love for you to come along with us. You know, One of the frequent questions I get when I talk about our trip to the Holy Land, people say to me, Tim, is it safe to go on your trip? To which I respond, you know, we won't be in New York but a few hours. So we're going to Israel. Israel is a safe or safer than any other place in the world. They take their security very, very seriously. So if you'd like to join us as we see Jerusalem and Bethlehem and the Dead Sea and the Sea of Galilee and the Jordan River and all the other places you've read about since you were a child in the Bible, we'd love to have you join us. For more information, go to the website twholyland.com. That's twholyland.com. Or for our brochure, call 800-FAMILIES. That's 800-FAMILIES, F-A-M-I-L-I-E-S, option 5.
The evolution of flight? This is Ken Ham, whose ministry has produced the family-friendly Answers Bible curriculum. Flight is supposed to have evolved slowly as dinosaurs changed into birds. But a supposedly 125-million-year-old bird fossil was discovered that had all the features modern birds have that allow them to fly very well. So evolutionists were forced to admit that flight had been around for longer than they'd thought. So they'll just change the story of evolution to match this new find. You see, evolution isn't good science. With every new find, the story changes again, and the textbooks have to be rewritten. Instead of trusting in man's fallible ideas, we need to stand on God's unchanging word. It doesn't change with every new discovery.
To discover more about the changing nature of evolutionary ideas, visit AnswersRadio.com. You can also learn about our unique Sunday school curriculum at AnswersRadio.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and Commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Dr. Robert Bowen. I am the Dean of Science, Technology, Engineering, and Mathematics, and I'm an Associate Professor of Physiology. So one of the benefits of being a faculty member at TMU is not only are we allowed to speak the gospel in the classroom and within our areas of discipline, we're encouraged to do so. Everybody needs to know the love of Christ. And so I try to incorporate in my classes, and one of the places that I incorporate in the most is in my office when I have students come in.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu. Today.
Folks, I've just about had it with all this talk about collusion. President Trump's enemies are just a bunch of jackals foaming at the mouth, seething with fury and hatred, and their bloodlust will not be satisfied until the president is driven from office. And where's the Republican leadership? Where are you, Paul Ryan? Where are you, Mitch McConnell? Hiding under your desks? Cavorting with Nancy Pelosi? Get out there and man up! Defend your president, all of you sniveling, lily-livered, morally bankrupt cowards. You know, the only people right now supporting and defending the president are we, the people. You want to talk about treason? Okay. Let's talk about the army of reporters and far lefties that are trying to take down a duly elected president of these United States. Well, friends, it's not going to happen. So all of you Democrats and all of you liberal Republicans and fake newsers, listen up. Don't tread on me, you Trump-hating traitors. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Tomorrow morning, GOP Senate leaders unveil their latest attempt at a health care plan they think can pass. So today, we've seen three kinds of Republican senators working the halls of Congress. There are those who appear to have gone from opposing the measure to almost supporting it, like Senator Ron Johnson.
Any one of my colleagues who said they were going to repeal it and now they're holding out because we're not throwing enough at the problem, I would really ask them to check their consciences and go, come on, what did you promise the American people?
There are those who are still firm no votes, like Senator Rand Paul.
When we looked at the bill a week ago and I said, or 2 weeks ago, and I said I couldn't support the bill as it was, they've now taken the bill and made it worse.
Then there are those who are ready to stop trying to pass health care without any Democratic votes and start reaching across the aisle, like Senator Lindsey Graham, who is ironing out details on a mysterious Plan B.
I want to give Democrats an opportunity to at least have input to the idea. But I may be wrong, but I think this will unite every Republican. And any Democrat who believes that states are probably better able to handle health care than Washington.
But if Republicans are to bring any Democrats on board, the Democratic whip Dick Durbin says they need to bring the drafting process into the light.
Here's a radical idea. Why don't they take their idea and put it in a committee, like the health committee, where the chairman can hold a hearing so the American people can take a look at what they propose, ask questions.
Leaders in the House are hesitant to delay their upcoming August recess, like the Senate just announced. So if anything passes the upper chamber, House lawmakers will have to come back to town to approve it.
Even though the Senate is delaying their August recess, some senators are now saying there could be a health care vote as soon as next week. But if the timeline slides again and the Senate isn't able to approve something, if they can approve something until after the House goes away on their August break, House lawmakers were told today they will receive 72 hours notice wherever they are in the world. It's time to come on back to work and approve the Senate bill.
All right. So that's Peter Doocy, and that's the report on Fox News yesterday. Yeah, it's pretty interesting because this morning, McConnell and whoever is knowledgeable, in the know, looped in, is going to brief the Republican conference on this. It'll be the first time they heard about it, this new version. At least they heard the details, I mean. Because you see, Senator McConnell and whoever is on the inside there is working with lobbyists on K Street to write this bill. So not senators, but lobbyists on K Street. So it really is, I think, is Exhibit A of why this Senate needs to have different people in it. I don't know when it's ever been more evident of the breakdown. You know, later, in the next few weeks, I'm going to be talking to a man who just wrote an article called The Real Reason the Republican Senate Isn't Repealing Obamacare. It's Angelo Codevilla. He's been around for years, and he talks about how Senator McConnell, if he really wanted to advance health care or the Trump agenda, all he has to do is manipulate the rules. There's no one who knows the rules better than Mitch McConnell, but he's not willing. And so we'll go into that in great detail. But the problem is there are real consequences of that. There was a press conference just yesterday with the senator saying time is running out to pass the Trump agenda. Well, duh. I heard a briefing yesterday about how little this Senate under Mitch McConnell, since President Trump has been elected, has accomplished. It really is embarrassing. Yes, they managed to get Neil Gorsuch through. That's true. Thank goodness for that. Maybe that's all they will do. It seems like they think that's enough. But they have ignored the president's pleas about, you know, funding for the border. Mitch McConnell just ignores him. He's made public statements. Well, you know, that's not my priority or whatever. And it's just always obstruction. And so time really is running out. There were four major priorities this year for the president, and that was health care, regulation, which that he's accomplished a lot, pulling back regulations, meaning President Trump, without the help of Congress, and with their help in some cases, the House certainly. Tax, they want tax reform, and they want, of course, the Supreme Court. Those are the priorities, but they have so few working days. And so now Mitch McConnell announced yesterday or the day before that they would, under pressure, they wouldn't do their five-week recess in August, that they would reduce it to three. They would work two more weeks valiantly to try to get all of these things done. No one really believes that this is a serious effort, and only under pressure has Mitch McConnell agreed to this. And let me just tell you, House leadership hasn't agreed to this. They don't want to give up their vacation time. I mean, it really is amazing. Somehow, these insulated members of Congress, the Senate and the House, just don't have the same sense of urgency that Americans who are living during these times have on health care, on taxes, on the burden of regulations, breaking the back of small businesses. The members of the Congress, Senate and House, they don't have that same urgency. Because they're fine, you see. They have their salary, and in many cases, they pad their incomes in other ways. They make connections when they go to Washington, and they use their connections, and they get very wealthy. And by the way, I didn't even ever cover it. This is outside of the box a little bit. That reminds me of something I never even have told you, is that the net worth of James Comey is amazing. And James Comey wasn't a wealthy person from a wealthy family. He had very ordinary upbringing, but now he's a wealthy man. How does that happen? But it seems to happen for Washington insiders all the time. And so so here we go. They're going to be giving up, you know, 2 weeks of their break. And here's the real nut of this. Kimberly Strassel did an article. I mentioned it yesterday, but I didn't have time to go into it very much. I want to give you a little bit more about it. She says the Trump presidency is well into its seventh month, but the Trump administration still barely exists. Senate Democrats are abusing Senate rules to undermine the executive branch, and Republicans need to restore normal order. What I'm going to say to that is the point is Senator McConnell knows the rules, and he is allowing and has allowed the Democrats to manipulate those rules. In fact, you know, Harry Reid was able to get through all kinds of nominations, judicial nominations, because he bent and used the rules. And Mitch McConnell knows how to do that, too, but he doesn't understand that the House is on fire. Well, maybe he doesn't understand. Maybe he does. Maybe his house is just not on fire, so he's not there yet. But just to spell this out, there's a 30-hour rule. The Democrats are using every rule at their disposal to stop and hinder everything. But Mitch McConnell's doing nothing about it. I guess that would be the way to balance, report it in balance. The two-day waiting period. Okay, let me read this. Democratic obstruction against nominees is nearly total, most notable including a demand for cloture filings for every nominee, no matter how minor the position. That means the 60-vote rule, so two votes. This means a two-day waiting period and then another 30 hours of debate. The 30-hour rule means Mr. Trump might not be able to fill all of those 400 positions in 4 years. In 4 years! But Senator McConnell doesn't seem that concerned about it. He likes to bluster and blame the Democrats, but he could do something about it, but he isn't. So then there's the issue of judicial nominations. It's a Senate custom, I think more than a rule, that home state senators issue a blue slip. I don't exactly know what that slip looks like, but it must be blue, saying that there's a judicial nomination made by the president from their home state, and they sign off on that person being voted for in the Senate. So like in the case of Michigan, I'll just pick that state out, there's a really fine nominee that the president has made, and she's been on hold forever because the Democratic senators from the state of Michigan will not submit their blue slip. Well, you know what? There's no law that says there have to be a blue slip. And if Mitch McConnell understood the seriousness of what's going on here, he could stop that, but he doesn't. I want to give you, actually, Shannon Bream did a report on this that I want you to hear. It kind of gives you an understanding of what's at stake here. Let's listen.
I, Neil M. Gorsuch, do solemnly swear.
While President Trump's successful nomination of Supreme Court Justice Neil Gorsuch is regularly touted by the administration as one of his greatest achievements to date, it's the scores of lower court federal judges he's choosing that could not only have an impact on key legal disputes now, but could also wind up cementing his long-term legacy.
The trend is certainly to look to young judges on the lower courts to fill Supreme Court seats when they open up. Then that gives you several decades of influence on the highest court.
Of 890 seats on the federal bench, 136 are currently vacant, with 15 nominations pending. During his 8 years in the White House, President Obama reshaped more than one key federal court, and with the help of then Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid, changed the rules for confirming federal judges to the lower courts forever. The Trump administration now plans to use that to the president's advantage.
What he now needs to do is to replicate the success of Justice Gorsuch on a massive scale throughout the courts of appeals and the district court.
Conservatives point to Judge Amul Thapar, who was recently elevated to a seat on the Sixth Circuit bench shortly after President Trump considered him to fill the Supreme Court seat of the late Justice Antonin Scalia, as a perfect example.
Senator, I will follow the law, and you will never have reason to say I didn't follow the law.
He fits the mold, accomplished, conservative, and young, and that worries the left.
And if Trump would be able to put a young judge in Justice Kennedy's seat, put, obviously, as he's done, Justice Gorsuch on the bench, we could have a Trumpian Supreme Court for decades if those justices and maybe several more.
The White House is wasting no time.
The president is moving reasonably aggressively to start filling the vacancies. He's already filled a number of them. He has many, many more to go.
Several of the state court judges President Trump included in his list of 21 potential Supreme Court nominees have since been nominated to take one of those open seats on the federal bench, seen as a move to beef up their credentials in advance of another Supreme Court opening.
All right. Again, that was a great report. And it is true. I can tell you it's true that the Trump administration is doing everything they can. They've got a whole lists, plural, of great nominees, and they have been nominated. But the problem is, no votes. Their consideration is just grinding to a halt. And let me read you some stats on this. Senate Democrats have delayed and stalled on confirming crucial appointments and nominations made by President Trump by putting nominees through time-consuming parliamentary procedures not seen by past administrations. Democrats in the Senate have allowed only 10% of President Trump's confirmations to happen by voice vote, while more than 90% of President Obama's were confirmed by a simple voice vote by this point in 2009. The average time it takes for the Senate to confirm a Trump nominee compared to past administrations is the highest in recent history. It's taking 43 days. President Trump's nominees have faced the burdensome hurdle of a cloture vote 30 times. I mean, that's the vote. You have to have 60 votes to vote on them. 30 times. While President Obama only had 8 cloture motions on his nominees by the August recess, 14 of President Trump's cabinet nominees faced cloture vote, compared to 11 for all previous presidents combined. Democrats have tried to slow the process, invoking arcane parliamentary procedure to force delays and boycotting committee meetings to prevent votes. Some Democrats have even admitted they are doing so for political revenge. Well, all right, they are doing that, but it is also true that Mitch McConnell could do something about that. There's nothing wrong with his understanding of the rules. He could override a lot of this stuff, and he's not doing that. And, of course, then they wanted to take this 5-week break in August, and the pressure, the heat was turned up, and now he has said, we'll stay 2 weeks longer. So that's supposed to be some Herculean effort. We'll see. Now, the health care bill, the next version of it will be released this morning. And, again, it's the first time that we'll actually see what it is. My understanding is that it's been made more moderate, you know, to woo more moderate senators. You know, that means more money. You know, I think my hint at this is the Medicaid expansion will stay. The tax for upper income earners will stay. I forgot what the concession is to conservatives. I can't remember in this moment. We'll know soon enough. But, the CBO is supposed to score this next bill on Monday. And the insiders are saying that there should be a vote next Tuesday. But that, you know, that may or may not happen. Depends. I want to refer back to the interview I did with Senator Dr. Tom Coburn, just a few days ago. I played it for you, in which he talked about the free market efforts that are underway right now to absolutely pull this thing away from the federal government and make this truly American free enterprise market system. He was very excited about it, and I was too as I talked to him. And he said he affirmed what I believe, and that is that the federal government has no business handling our health care. Do you want to go to the doctor and have it look like the line at the DMV? Do you want to try to call for advice from your pediatrician when your baby is running a high fever and have an eternal voicemail and then not ever be able to reach a doctor? Because that's what happens when the federal government takes over. They're not capable. They don't hire the best people. And then once they hire them, they can't get rid of them. And so you have no, you know, assurance that the person picking up the phone is even going to be qualified or care anything about the problems that you're having at your end. It didn't used to be that way. I remember when my children were little, I had a lot of emergencies with my daughter, and I had the most wonderful clinic. And I would wait. I couldn't get them unless I tried to call sparingly, but it was 8 o'clock on Monday when I could really get through to a doctor. And they were so good to respond. It's not going to be that way if the federal government takes over our health care program. I think Dr. Coben is spot on. What I wish is that this Senate would let Obamacare, they would let it die or overturn it and let the market step in. Keep Medicaid for the really poor, but the free market, give them a chance to come in and solve these complex problems and forget about giving money to their buddies on K Street who are all about health care and making people, enriching people in ways they should not. This is disgraceful. All right, the plan will be revealed this morning, so we'll find out soon. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
You shall have no other gods before me. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. In a speech at the annual convention of the Islamic Society of North America, activist, provocateur, Sharia law proponent, and organizer of the so-called Women's March, Linda Sarsour called for jihad against the Trump administration. Sarsour also called for Muslims to refuse to assimilate into American society. She said this before a group of Muslims, supposedly to have gathered to contribute to the betterment of the Muslim community and society at large. And she has become a darling of the regressives as a voice for moderate Islam. Does that sound moderate to you?
Visit the Hamilton Corner on the podcast page at AFR.net for more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Satan may be a powerful being, but he's still only one person. So how does the devil manage to tempt and deceive billions of people all at the same time? Thursday on Pathway to Victory, Dr. Robert Jeffress exposes the reality of Satan's accomplices and what they're capable of doing to you. Join us Thursday for Pathway to Victory with Dr. Robert Jeffress.
Pathway to Victory, each weekday morning at 6 o'clock Central on American Family Radio.
Volunteering with Operation Christmas Child, I feel like I'm fulfilling a calling.
I've never been on a mission trip, and I don't know if I ever will, but this is my opportunity to spread the gospel.
Volunteering with Operation Christmas Child directly connects you with God's global purposes. Find out how you can invest your skills and passion as part of the year-round volunteer team with Operation Christmas Child. Learn more or apply at SamaritansPurse.org/volunteer with OCC.
So, what would you do with an extra $500 a month in your budget? $500. This isn't hypothetical, by the way. This is something you may need to think about very soon if you decide to become a member of MediShare. MediShare is a way to pay for your health care, and typically it costs $500 less per month for a family versus other health care plans. So seriously, think about this. You could pay off loans, pay down a mortgage, save the money for retirement, donate to charity. That would be a big deal. But you know what? Here's the best thing. MediShare works. It has 250,000 members, and it's growing fast. With MediShare, not only do you save, you don't have to pay for things you don't believe in either, and that is a beautiful thing too. So here's how you can find out more, and you might actually wind up saving even more than $500 a month. So check into it. Here's the number. Call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23, now available in Montana. 855-PSALM-23.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Missouri Congresswoman Vicki Hartzler wants her colleagues in the House of Representatives to have a vote today to roll back part of Barack Obama's wrecking operation against the U.S. military. Historically, it has been both common sense and official practice to regard the armed forces as essential to the security of our nation. Accordingly, their personnel were selected for the purpose of winning decisively any conflict. During the Obama years, however, the military services were directed to subordinate this priority to advancing a radical political agenda without regard for, and at huge cost to, combat readiness and morale in the ranks. The most egregious example of such social engineering is a requirement to integrate transgender individuals and pay for their sex change operations and other vast healthcare requirements. Representative Hartzler is trying to stop such insanity and deserves our strong support. This is Frank Affney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Yeah, Sandy Rios back with you. Just to piggyback on what Frank just said, I heard yesterday in a meeting that this amendment by Vicky Hartzler, which would reverse the military's decision to recruit and bring in transgender soldiers to pay for their operations, their hormone treatments, it is absolutely unbelievable. You know that James Mattis has only given us a six-month delay in implementing this. It's disgraceful. So Vicky Hartzler introduces this amendment to stop this madness. And my understanding as of yesterday is that that amendment did not go in. It didn't go into the National Defense Authorization Act. It didn't. The leadership, I guess, in the House didn't figure it was that important because it didn't make it in. Now, there is supposed to be another, what they call, markup in which it might make it in. But I'm asking, why was it not a priority? This is going to cost millions of dollars, and it's going to weaken our military. It really is ridiculous. And so let me just say, if you are concerned about this, and I bet you are, because I am too, you need to call your congressperson. The switchboard number is 202-224-3121. That's 202-224-3121. We'll put that on our Facebook page. And the idea is that you call your congressperson and ask, demand, really, that they support Vicky Hartzler's, I don't know what to call it easily, her amendment on transgender persons in the military. We'll put that on our Facebook page to help you figure out the verbiage. All right, well, our next guest is someone I always enjoy talking to. Ken Cuccinelli is currently the president of the Senate Conservatives Fund. He was a former attorney general in Virginia. He ran for governor and nearly won against Terry McAuliffe, when we all know how the nation has suffered because he didn't win that race. And Ken first, I think, came to national attention because of his all-out battle against Obamacare as Attorney General of Virginia. And he joins us this morning. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning, Sandy.
Hey, it's good to have you.
Good to be with you.
Yeah, you know, before you joined me, I talked quite a bit about this health care bill and the sort of the procedure. So I'm curious to know what you're hearing about this new proposal this morning, if anything, and what your thoughts are on whether they should be voting for it.
Well, it does look like Mitch McConnell is up to his same old, if you will. He is going to cut a deal with Democrats, break his own campaign promises, and blame conservatives for it. And he'll do it with the support of friendly folks in the media. And you know, when we talk about the media left and right, people forget there's plenty of left in the Republican Party. Unfortunately, the entire leadership seems to think that's the position to adopt in Congress, meaning Mitch McConnell and John Cornyn and their team and Paul Ryan in the House and Kevin McCarthy and so forth. And presumably that's because the moneyed interests are who they answer to, not their voters. And Mitch McConnell is playing this script out again. And you just offered up the switchboard for folks to call their congresspeople on the National Defense Authorization Act. And I'm glad you did that. That's obviously critically important. I would urge them all to just call Mitch McConnell's office and politely but firmly let him have it over abandoning the actual repeal of Obamacare in favor of, and let's be clear, propping it. This isn't like a small rollback that McConnell is looking to support. This is propping it up. This isn't the Cruz Amendment that offers consumer choice and offers an opt-out to Obamacare. This is actually trying to make this destructive socialized medicine put a Band-Aid on it. And you know, classic Mitch McConnell and Republican leadership, and let's be clear, you can't blame this on the Democrats. This is the Republicans abandoning us and our principles once again.
You know, I just was featuring yesterday and today both an article by Antonio Codavia in The Federalist about the mismanagement. I guess that's a kind word. I guess a dereliction of duty.
That's a very kind word. That suggests a lack of intent.
Exactly. Dereliction of duty by leadership in the Senate. Yeah. And he goes into great detail about how Senator McConnell, being the rules animal that he is, could counter all of the stuff, all of the obstruction that's going on. He could change the rules by a simple majority vote. There's a lot of things that he could do. Would you agree with that, Ken?
I most certainly would, but not only that. Vice President Pence is the presiding officer in the Senate. All this talk about parliamentarians and procedures, it is the presiding officer that makes rulings, not the parliamentarian. The parliamentarian offers advice. And do you know how many votes it takes to overrule the presiding officer? Not 51. It takes 60. If Vice President Pence ruled a bill in order and compliant with the rules of reconciliation, then where are they going to get 60 votes without Mitch McConnell? And I don't think he's going to go head-to-head with Vice President Pence. To overturn that. It isn't going to happen. There's been very little talk. I mean, Mike Pence is a good man. He's the place we ought to be looking to sidestep the parliamentary obstructionism of the Democrats.
Well, that's very interesting.
And the reluctance of people like John McCain and Mitch McConnell should be brushed aside.
Yeah, I want to know, follow the money. And there was just an article, which was not news to me, but I guess it was news to a lot of people, that John McCain, his foundation in Arizona, is funded in part by George Soros. Not too much of a surprise. I don't know where, it's amazing, Ken, how these people make it to the Senate and become so wealthy. And then that's where their obligations are. And I think my listeners actually get that, because I beat this all the time. And I want to turn to something else, because you are the president of Senate Conservatives Fund. It was founded by Jim DeMint. It gave us people like Senator Cruz, Senator Lee, Senator Paul, and Senator Rubio. This was one of the first rebellions by a sitting senator against his leadership, and Jim DeMint and then Ken Cuccinelli following after him have made a mark on our Senate. So, Ken, we have these races coming up in 2018, and I'd be really curious to know how you see that landscape.
Well, the landscape is very good. I mean, the environment, let's start with the basics. There's a three-election cycle in the Senate. Every 2 years, a third of the Senate is up. 2016 was the toughest of those three elections from a conservative perspective. And, of course, the leadership abandoned us, as they always do. 2018 is the best map for us. Just this week, Attorney General Patrick Morrisey of West Virginia got into the U.S. Senate primary in West Virginia against Congressman Jenkins, who until a couple of years ago was a Democrat, voted for Obama twice. That's the kind of candidate the leadership wants. They want Obama Republicans. But Patrick Morrisey's in that race over in Ohio. I said this to my team this week. I have never seen such a good candidate in Josh Mandel, who is the state treasurer of Ohio and a rock-ribbed conservative and a combat veteran. I've never seen such a good candidate doing so well against such a bad candidate, by which I mean liberal and Sherrod Brown, so early. I mean, there is a race where conservatives can not only flip a seat from Democrat to Republican, which, as we've talked about effectively, isn't all that important if you don't get good conservative Republicans in there. Well, Josh Mandel offers a spectacular opportunity in that regard. And with so many Trump states up, basically red states, like North Dakota, Montana, Missouri, if we can get good conservative candidates in those states, we're going to have a real opportunity to send reinforcements to the Mike Lees, the Rand Pauls, the Ted Cruzes. Although, of course, we have to make sure Ted Cruz gets reelected, and that's something the Senate Conservatives Fund is keenly focused on. We were keenly focused on getting him elected the first time around in 2012, and we're one of the few groups out there that really supported him hard, literally to the tune of millions of dollars.
Yeah.
And folks can help us get real conservatives. We fight these liberal Republicans because we're not about being Republican, we're about being conservative. And if your listeners are supportive of that, as Jim DeMint was, we'd love to have their help and support for very selective candidates. We don't just support anybody.
Yes, I know that. And you know, and that's the Senate Conservatives Fund, as I said, has really left its mark on the Senate. In fact, you know, can you imagine the Senate in the last 8 years, if not for Senator Cruz, Senator Lee, Senator Paul, and Rubio? Honestly, those four men have done incredible things. Like, I think of Senator Paul right now. Right now, he's standing alone against, I'm not voting for this bill. We have to repeal Obamacare. I'm not voting for this. I'm actually glad for that position. I don't know how you feel about it.
Oh, my gosh, so am I. Oh, so am I. And look, when he sets his mind to something, Senator Paul is quite immovable. He's spectacular on civil liberties. Of course, he's a doctor. He's an eye doctor. And having him taking the position he is on Obamacare is spectacularly helpful and encouraging, frankly, to those of us who realize how destructive this is to America. Ted Cruz, of course, made his mark in the Senate fighting Obamacare back in 2013. Senator Lee has been there all along and so forth. So to get some more reinforcements out of some of these red states like Ohio, where they have a very liberal senator right now in Senator Brown, and the opportunity to get a combat veteran Marine conservative who's been elected statewide, he's the state treasurer, has done battle with John Kasich, so he's certainly been tested by his own Republican leadership. He appears ready to come to Washington to really make a mark. That's the kind of change we need in Washington. More of this get along, go along, let's fix the Democrat bill instead of actually repealing it as we've promised for 7 years.
I know, ridiculous.
7 years.
And Ken, you know,
it is ridiculous.
Many of us have been saying, and I certainly have beat this drum for a long time on radio, is in these election cycles, we must pay attention to the primary. And the game is that the big moneyed Washington insiders select candidates, send millions of dollars in, run opposition research, which we're all familiar with after the Donald Trump Jr. email, opposition research, and often not true, and will sabotage and destroy a conservative so that they can get their own, then they'll have their candidate run as though they are a conservative. This is the game. As everybody forewarned, I've mentioned it 100 times. And so it's now
yeah,
that we have
and
to
look, the kind of people who listen to your program, I'm like all those people. And the thing we most often suffer from is we're too nice, too trusting. So somebody comes along and says, I'm a conservative. And we believe them. And they're lying. They're lying. And everyone say the word with me. We're going to say it. Lying. Ready? 1, 2, 3. Lying. That is a hard word for us. It's a hard concept for us to accept about virtually any other human being who we think of as being on our team. Folks, they are lying to you. Mitch McConnell lies to you. He is a liar. A liar. A liar. Say it out loud. Yeah. Accept it. Understand it. And know what you're dealing with when you make that phone call to his office. He lied to you. He ran over 30,000 ads in October of 2014 alone saying he was going to repeal Obamacare. And we all know the phrase, root and branch. Root and branch. Mm-hmm. And that has never been his intent at any point ever. He lied to us. And we need to keep it in that context. This is not some mild misunderstanding. They used us for our votes by lying to us, and we need to hold them accountable. And Sandy, you are exactly right. The best place to do that is in primaries against these people.
Yep.
And one of the things Senate Conservatives Fund does, and that's why Mitch McConnell hates us as much as he does, we do challenge incumbents. We spent $2 million trying to knock Mitch McConnell out, supporting Matt Bevin. Now, Matt Bevin didn't make it to the Senate. By golly, he's the governor of Kentucky today.
I know, and he's doing a great job. He's doing a great job. Ken, we got to go. You hear the music. But it's Senate Conservatives Fund. The Senate Conservatives Fund. If you want to know the races to follow and the ways to help, even if you're not in that state, you can pitch in and have great senators elected from other states. Ken, thank you for your leadership on this, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Sandy.
All right, Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.